Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Well, good morning, everybody. Today's Monday. It's the 7th of January, and it's 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. My name's Hezzy Eris. I'm your host today, and we're going to be joined very shortly with our Monday co-host, John Bailey from the White Plains Citizenet Reporter, WPCNR.com for short. We're going to cover a lot of issues with him that are specific to the county and a little bit about White Plains as well, and therefore it also impacts Yonkers and the rest of Westchester County, because there are many issues that are being brought up through the Westchester County Association on behalf of George Latimer, Westchester County Executive George Latimer. And there are questions about how to move ahead, how to handle taxes, whether to become engaged in a private-public partnership with regard to airport, and so on and so forth. Well, I see our co-host is on the line. Good morning, John Bailey. How are you?
Good morning from White Plains, New York, USA. Is the government open yet?
Is the what open?
The government.
No, not at all. Are you kidding?
Close. You know, did we miss them?
Well, I don't think we really miss them. Because
no, we don't.
Because they've been absent.
They should all go home, because they're ineffectual.
Well, that's very, very true. Speaking of ineffectuality, I was noting just before you got on that the Westchester County Association is going to be bringing up an issue or issues that they would like to be considered by the Westchester County Executive, but he doesn't want to take a position, so they're asking the questions on his behalf, which you wrote in the White Plains Citizenet Reporter online. So how do you look at that?
Well, what I think is fascinating is that this was an email sent out basically to the WCAA membership.
Yeah.
And I decided that, hey, why not ask people out there in Westchester County as a whole how he's doing?
Well, that's a good question, but that was the thing that I was thinking about. Those are the questions that they present to the Westchester County Association membership. Does the membership fully comprehend all these issues that are being asked about? I mean, how do you make
really,
a definition
really
of whether you
should
raise taxes or not? What?
Yes. One really does wonder that, because anything that is good for business is good for business. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
That's
like
let's
not prosecute businesses. Let's make them immune from lawsuits. Let's make them absolutely whatever they want to do is fine. That's what business idea of regulation is. No regulation.
Well, that's been a really major problem, and they bring up issues as well with respect to business interests, like whether there should be a public-private partnership in operating the airport. That's like a loaded question. It doesn't say very much, does it? On what basis do you go with one side or the other?
Well, that's right. What I think has to be considered is, should the airport be expanded so that it can handle many more flights than it does, so it can have a runway that can serve international flights and larger jets, i.e. And this is a growth area for Westchester. That airport has been kept small, and as it is, because of the wealthy Greenwich community, which is right next door. And that has got to stop, because Greenwich contributes nothing.
Absolutely. Well, but that's the issue, isn't it? They won't answer the main question, as you pointed out, not only this time, but for years you've been pointing out that the airport hasn't been expanded. It should be in order to meet the demands of Westchester County, not any other of our neighboring municipalities, the outside of the state, and
yeah.
definitely outside of the county.
Yeah.
But why don't they ask these basic questions? Because how do you get to whether it should be a public-private partnership if you don't know what you want to do with the property?
If you don't know what you want the private partner to do.
Right.
Or do for you.
Exactly.
And this
exactly.
is something that has to be really dealt with. Number one, maybe you don't want to expand the flights, but you could certainly put a hotel on that airport and make it more of a
mm-hmm.
destination type place. You could tax
right.
the hotel, and you would have restaurants in the hotel, and there is a place to put that.
Right.
You know,
well,
you eliminate some of these like Millionaire, you know, the FBO, which is there, that caters to a very rich clientele, the private
yeah,
jet
absolutely.
Crowd.
Absolutely.
And so therefore, and they've done tremendous expansion of it, and my
mm-hmm.
feeling is you should pop a hotel on the adjacent Woodsy property to the southwest
mm-hmm.
of the airport.
Absolutely.
Where the Harrison dump is.
Point.
There certainly is nothing
yeah.
There is nothing environmentally sound about the Harrison dump, which is adjacent to the airport.
No, not at all. I wanted to ask you also about the question that they asked their membership, whether there should be an increase in taxes, and if they think that we're being taxed enough, or if we need to be taxed more in order to cover the budget deficit that has been anticipated. So are we going to, I mean, who are these people to decide on their own? They're business
No, I mean,
people. What about
that,
the rest
that,
of them?
That is very interesting because it is the county budget as they passed it does increase taxes very little, according
yeah.
to them. On the other hand, the budget also borrows to keep the tax increase as small as it is. When
right.
and they have not said how they're going to use the excess sales tax, which they garnered this year. And if that just goes into fund balance, then you're obviously taxing too much. I mean, I am tired of saying to this business, aren't you, about bond ratings as being half, well, we have to protect that and because Moody's says we are this or Fitch says we are this. Those agencies are incompetent. We found that out when they rated the derivatives back in the mid-80s. We remember that, don't we?
Absolutely.
Don't you?
I do
yes.
remember. I'm old enough to remember
They said they were okay. And they were wrong,
yeah.
dead wrong. Cost
they,
us ten, the last
wrong.
10 years.
So, do you think it's appropriate for them to ask these business people whether the county should request approval from New York State to raise the county sales tax?
Well,
and
that
what else,
is what.
What do you
that's
do
what
to
they're going to do
for that? They
that's
are
what
going
they're going
to
do.
But why do they? Why are they so timid about saying what they want to do? Where's the pushback?
Well, this is the mantra. You come in, you say the previous administration was irresponsible and they didn't take care of Westchester's needs. But we can take care of Westchester needs if we increase the sales tax because that'll wipe out our deficit that
mm-hmm.
county legislature approved the last 10 years. I mean, this is the big scandal here. They are trying to blame the Astriano policies for policies
mm-hmm.
that they approved by approving his budgets.
Well, absolutely. That's the thing that people so easily forget. They just blame Astriano because he was the Republican figurehead. He was at the top of the heap. And so they blame him for everything. But all of this also went to people who supported this legislation be passed. And Kaplowitz, he was one of the main leaders on the Democratic side, and Virginia Perez, and on the as well as a Democrat, and they voted
yes.
along with the Republicans. So who's
yes,
to blame?
Yes, which never is pointed out
they
by the general
do. Why?
Such as it is.
Well, exactly.
And that's because they are establishmentarian.
Well, that's true, too. Very well expressed.
I mean, let's face it. George Lauder is very popular. He's a very smooth leader. He has a tremendous reputation in the area. People think he really cares about them. And he exudes this image very well. And that covers a lot of sins.
Yeah, absolutely. One other thing that I've got to be very thankful for in your reporting is someone who's a frequent commentator at People to Be Heard on your video show, and this guy named Aaron Warden, and he evidently mentioned that there's a scammer out there that's claiming to be an Apple support caller. But he says it's an outright scam. So can you explain a little bit more about the scam and why it's so important for people to recognize it?
Well, Apple, I believe, is the number one computer around, right?
I guess so. I'm not sure, but it's certainly one
not
of
sure,
the top manufacturers.
What happens is this is very similar to calls that I've gotten from Microsoft, allegedly Microsoft, but now it is a new wrinkle in which it calls Apple support claiming that your iCloud account was compromised. And the number is 212-336-1440. Aaron says he got four robocalls like this on Sunday, and so he thought I should know about it. This is, he says, this is not Apple support, that it is an out-of-out scam to harvest your personal credit card information.
Mm-hmm.
He says, Apple, Microsoft, Amazon will never call you unless you've scheduled a callback from their legitimate tech support department.
And I thought there was something very interesting as well. He says you could check out if actual tech support is reaching out to you by simply going to this website that you pointed out in your article, www.gethuman.com, and it doesn't show up as this number that they're calling from, this 212-336-1440 number, which is very, very – that's really fantastic news reporting, John. Got to hand it to you.
It was very nice. Aaron Warden has been in business about 17 years in White Plains. As an individual who comes to your home or business, he has a tremendous consulting clientele, and he fixes things when your computer goes wrong, gets compromised, and gets overloaded with whatever it is, and he has made a business. And obviously computers are much more vulnerable than we ever suspected they would be. And so this is where his back comes from. So, and he occasionally, when he runs across something new in the scam game, he writes me about it, and that's what he did yesterday. So that was really nice of him to do that. However, it raises the question is, why aren't the police more aware of these scams? Why aren't the computer companies more aware of these scams? Why don't the computer companies alert people to these scams as a regular basis? It's a good question, isn't
it? It's a brilliant question, and unfortunately, those are the sort of things that maybe it's the lack of media. They're not sensitive to these issues, or they get caught up in whatever the whistleblower item is on a particular day. But we lose sight of the things that are most relevant.
Well, more
I don't get it.
How about the companies that provide the phone services for all these? You purchase these numbers, this robo equipment. You call via regular telephone lines. They amalgamate area phone numbers which look familiar to you, like 914, and they call at random, or somehow they get lists of Apple owners or lists of Microsoft clients. And really, I don't have Apple equipment, so I haven't gotten this call yet. So,
well, but the thing that's really outrageous about
how is this being done on such a massive national basis without it being addressed by government?
Because they're probably in bed with the big communication companies, so they don't really manage what should be allowable. They're selling lists and they're selling their business and they're selling all these scammers, the phones and the systems. So, and they know they're big operations.
Yes, and in fact, Facebook is fighting
to.
Facebook is fighting to for a law that say that unless their use of your data or selling the data that you provide to Facebook cause actual harm to you, that you can't sue them for invasion of privacy. That was pointed out in an op-ed in the Times today. But this is what companies, they don't want to be regulated. They don't want to be responsible. When you do business with them, they consider you a pigeon to make money on.
Absolutely. I don't understand
why this
that hasn't been regulated.
It's a tremendous list-building company, and that's all it is. There's nothing ingenious about it. And
no, but the thing that's interesting about it all is that somehow we're behind the Europeans, who are a little bit more assertive about maintaining people's privacy, which is not the way it used to be 10 years ago, where Americans were more on the forefront. But maybe it's because the companies that are harvesting all these names and access information are companies like Google and Apple and Facebook and WhatsApp and all that stuff. And people don't even realize that WhatsApp is part of Facebook. You know, it's truly amazing how they get away with this stuff.
Well, it's the Facebook model. They are making money by selling advertising. It's a fantastic worldwide radio station, a fantastic worldwide call-in show in which you publish things on Facebook so your friends can see it, but the whole world can see it.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's a lot of bad people in that world who use these things. They steal your photos. They put them on triple X-rated websites. And that's what they do. And that's something that's been written about. But I know that these websites that are triple X-rated, and dating sites particularly, they have tremendous millions of fake ads that appeal to lonely people. And what they do is they just steal people's photos.
Yeah, that's so true.
And put them up and create fake IDs. They send out fake messages.
Yeah. Well, I guess there's so much money to be made in these sort of businesses that evidently business is not uncomfortable collecting the money and making a buck on it. And
money talks, nobody walks more than ever today.
More than ever, you're right. Things are changing, but I think in a negative manner.
I talk about all those websites that appeal to the lonely men and women of the world, and of course the foreign dating sites. Like there's Asian dating sites, there is Russian dating sites, and filled with hundreds of women's pictures with basically fake IDs. And what they do is they attempt to get you to send them money so they can come and see you in the United States.
Yeah.
That's what they do.
That's amazing. Yeah.
And God forbid you send them money. And, of course, we don't see that in the New York Times, do we?
No, we don't. But that's the interesting thing again. It always falls down to the same thing, doesn't it? There used to be an ethical standard which was different 10 years ago and 20 years ago and 30 and 40 and 50 years ago. And somehow or another, maybe we need to get back to a concept of what should be an ethical standard by which we can conduct business and which we conduct personal relationships. We have really gotten very, very far away from an older day. And maybe that's the way it is in every generation. But I think there's something lacking now more than ever before. It's very frightening.
Well, it is, and it has grown exponentially in the 20 years since I've been hacking around on the Internet. And amazing. But, you know, it's a dirty job, and someone's got to do it and see what's out there. I mean, and it's not pretty.
Yeah. No, it's really not.
But this is aided and abetted by legitimate businesses.
Yes. And also by people in government that aid and abet those businesses, because the only way for them to become reelected is to garner the favor of big business that will actually pay for their reelection effort. And this is a vicious cycle that a lot of people who are reluctant to get engaged in the political process because they think it's so dirty, it's because they're not engaged. It would be a lot better if more people were involved. So we would have a much better, more representative government by people that we believe in. You know, so we're not going to vote for them because they're the best looking, or whatever other attributes we want to bring to them. But we'll look the basis by which they conduct their life. We don't do that anymore.
Speaking of candidates we can believe in, what do you think of the Biden candidacy?
You know, I think that it's all right, but I think they've built up somebody who is interesting, and he's got a great reputation, a personal, very ethical standard sort of guy, but I don't know if he's got the goods to actually win. And I think it's important that we have credible candidates with a policy other than just that his son died and there's so many other things that are personal that engender him to us. But I don't know what his policy is. Do you?
Well, the same can be said for the Democratic Party as a whole.
Absolutely. I agree.
Not articulate. We discuss this weekly, and we keep waiting for them to come up with solid progressive, and that I don't mean that, you know, as progressive as credible stuff that they plan to do to sort of bring the parties back together so they can govern. Nobody says that.
Well, it doesn't seem like anyone.
But of course, they lost with that last time out.
They did. Well,
this is a very difficult problem for them. It requires kind of new thinking. I really like some of the a focus on new members of Congress. However, some of them have to sort of, you know, tame it down. Like, you just cannot speak in public as the representative from, I think it is Minnesota, spoke out this week. Can't use profanity, you know? Profanity.
Oh, yeah, there was somebody that used profanity against the president.
Yes, really. You know, and that just totally was a mistake by her. She's never going to live that down because everybody will refer to that. And the problem is you have to speak. Profanity is the resort of the inarticulate. That's why
absolutely.
We have so many written movies these days. They use four-letter words when they can't think of anything else to write.
It's very true. Well, you know what's so interesting, though? We have somehow arrived at a insensitivity to respect other people, and that may have started out in the campaign trail elected President Trump. So the problem is that we're getting used to this sort of salty language, the derogatory remarks said about other people, demeaning them, diminishing them, doing all sorts of things that take away their humanity. And that's a problem because there's too much bullying in politics as well.
Yeah.
And people don't recognize that. And there's an abusive relationship that we have in our political system that is almost akin to the domestic violence that we see in homes.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter who's beating up the other, but certainly it does matter at the end of the day when our discourse is now almost like a Stockholm syndrome that's out there. And people don't know what to do. We really should have greater direction, and we don't have it. Well, you know, your reporting helps a great deal to dissipate this. I think that's very important.
Well, that's why we do the website.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. Because I felt it was needed. I started this in 2000, just about the time you started yours. And
yes,
exactly. We have been going now. This is our 19th year.
Oh, I got to ask you, because we only have a few minutes left. Did you read that the Journal News just fired 4 people?
No, I did not.
Even Ernie Garcia, it was his last day, was on Friday. And there were other people who are even older than he who've been there for 30 years, and they fired all 4. And the biggest reporter for the Journal News was Ernie Garcia. What are they going to do? What are they going to report on? It's going to be USA Today in Westchester, and they'll call it the Journal News? Low HUD?
Something like that. They've only been reporting on Rockland County for about the last 2 to 3 years because
that
is sort of advertising mecca for them. And I think I'm really shocked. They have to have some people reporting.
I
and
the
sports section is a shadow of it once was.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
That used to be one of the big leaders for them. It was local sports. And
local sports always is a good leader everywhere, whether it be little publications or larger ones, because you've got a built-in interest in sports. Hey,
it is not surprising because if you cannot get the advertising, you cannot pay staff, and you do not get advertising without a big circulation, and I would guess that they are down below 40,000 in circulation between Westchester and Rockland and the other counties. That's my guess. And that includes their website.
Exactly.
This is a crisis because you need a paper that knows what's going on, and they don't.
Well, they had it easy for many years. They were fed information, whereas we weren't and still aren't. But evidently, they were the reason that we were created.
That's right. They created their own monsters. But now we are looked upon as the monsters, the fake media by many because they don't like what we write.
Well, that's because we're writing the truth, John.
Yes, nobody likes
the truth. The truth. No, nobody likes the truth.
Nobody likes the truth.
This
is a harsh mistress.
Yeah, absolutely. She's a tough one, but she's beautiful.
That's right.
You know, so,
and
You know, so that's okay.
She treats, and you never go wrong with trusting the truth. It may hurt you seriously, but you will sleep at night. And we are a nation of many people now who don't sleep well at night.
Yeah. Very true. John,
but anyway,
Buddhism
is a very good point. It's sad because people who get fired, who are writers, reporters, maybe they'll wind up on News 12, another shadow of its former self.
Well, we'll see. Listen, John, I got to let you go. Enjoy the
Okay, good luck with Mike, who I guess is coming up.
Yes.
And
yes, he is.
He gets
on.
Good material every week, doesn't he?
Oh, every week.
Every week.
Consistent.
He just sits there in the Florida sun, man.
Well, you've got to soak it up. Someone's got to do it. Anyway,
yeah, someone has to do that. It's tough living in Florida.
Bye.
Bye for now.
Bye. All right, let's just see. Let's pull in Michael Edelman. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Hi, Hezzy. How are you?
I'm okay. Well, you know, despite the fact that John Bailey from the White Plains Cincinnati Reporter seems to just sit back and, you know, just soak it in because it's not easy keeping up with all the dalliances and the constantly changing landscape. But at the end of the day, it's the same, isn't it? It's just not functioning.
Well, if you're,
and I guess that's the biggest.
If you're a political junkie like me, it's not tough.
No, it's not, because you do have a handle on it, which is really what's so important. Going on, though, with everything that's going on, the biggest thing is, of course, that Mueller's investigation capacity has been extended. He's beseeched the federal judge to extend his investigation,
mm-hmm.
and she granted him mm-hmm. another 6 months.
Yep.
This is like the death knell for the president.
Well, look, the walls are closing in on this presidency, but unlike some of the Democrats who are calling for impeachment, it is not time for impeachment because there's not sufficient evidence yet that he committed the types of high crimes and misdemeanors that you would need to not only impeach but to convict. You need 67 votes to convict in the Senate.
Right.
So just drawing articles of impeachment in the House of Representatives is a distraction, frankly. Okay? And the Democrats who are calling for that should not be. That's the wrong thing to do. And so, you know, you have that newly elected woman from, I forget where she's from, Tlaib, who said, you know, we have to impeach the mother effer. No, you don't. You have to wait for Bob Mueller to reveal the nexus between the Trump campaign and Russia, and then you can impeach and convict. Because that's when Republicans in the Senate will be persuaded to get rid of this president. Plus, if he keeps acting erratically, look what happened with Syria. He announced he was going to withdraw from Syria. 30 days, he said, right? So
what do we
have now? We have John Bolton, a hawk in Israel, and Mike Pompeo going to Jordan to attempt to walk the entire statement back because everybody knows that he, off the cuff, did three things, really. He jeopardized Israel's security. He jeopardized the security of our allies, the Kurds, and he enabled Iran, Russia, and Assad. He did three horrible things without thinking. If he continues to do stuff like that, it's going to get just messier and messier.
Well, that's the whole thing, isn't it? You know, it's a lot of people used to say that America is doing whatever it does for the benefit of Israel. But that isn't the case if America is going to engage people like the Kurds, who actually were instrumental in whittling down the power of ISIS, and then all of a sudden it says, well, it's time for us to go, see ya, and the next thing we know, the Kurds are under attack even more, And looks like ISIS has not been wiped out in any way, shape, or form. I don't know why the president said that it was.
Because he doesn't understand the policy. The man doesn't read his briefing book. He goes off the top of his head. He doesn't understand. You, if you're president of the United States, you need to spend 3 or 4 hours a day reading your intelligence briefings and reading the reports from your various agencies. There's never been a president that treats this like a reality television show, and he's the star, and that's all. And he says X, and it happens. It's magical. Look at the wall. Look at the problems he's got with the wall. He's not going to get the wall. There is going to be no wall, okay? And the more he insists on it, the less chance he's going to be. He'll keep his 35% of the population that doesn't understand the border, that doesn't understand that shutting the government down has put 800,000 people at risk. It put farm loans at risk. It's put disaster assistance at risk. It put tariff relief payments on hold. The IRS audits and refunds are compromised if it goes on a little bit longer. Health and safety at national parks. The TSA screeners aren't showing up, which means a terrorist could slip through the lines at the airports. And the airline pilots are so upset that they sent a public letter to Trump telling him to knock it off.
It's absolutely outrageous because it seems to have literally reached a crescendo this week more than ever I've seen. And also the discourse among people like the Tlaib statement and the sort of statements that we've been hearing from the president himself. Are we getting so far removed from the civility that once was the reign and I guess the patina that people respected about America?
Well, I don't know if the word you just used was stability or civility, but either one goes. Okay,
right.
Because we're not stable. We're not viewed as a stable democracy, and we're not viewed as having a civil political discourse anymore in this country. And the president sets the tone at the top. So when he goes to a rally and he says, "I'd like to knock the shit out of them," or "F this," or "they're not yet," that's the president talking, you know? So these people that sit in the heartland get a big chuckle out of this because their lives are the F word, and that's what they say, and that's what they hear, and that's what they want to be entertained by. But the presidency is supposed to be a cut above that. The president's supposed to lead. He's supposed to lead the world, and he's supposed to lead the nation in moral tone. You know, I read an article. I'm not familiar with the Bible, but I read an article by a New York Times reporter that said, essentially, I'm going to encapsulate it, that the King Cyrus is what evangelicals believe Donald Trump is the second coming of. Cyrus was an authoritarian dictator. You did read that. It was extremely interesting, and that's why they're willing to excuse what they would never excuse in anybody else, which is the vulgarity and the erratic behavior. Because they want somebody who is going to impose his will on America. And that makes them not Christian, but Christianists, which are nationalist Christians. And I found that, and I'm not a nationalist Christian, okay? And nobody I know is a nationalist Christian. And the fact of the matter is that they're not going to impose their view of religion on the United States, after the Constitution has said Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of a religion. That doesn't mean some laws. It doesn't mean sometime.
Right.
It doesn't mean occasionally. It means never.
Yeah. So where do we go from all of this? Or are we just stuck in the mud where we are now and it only seems to get worse and worse? And the president is lashing out. And yet he also, and you see, he wavers back and forth. He doesn't take one stand, and then he says, "Well, I wanted to build a concrete wall, but then maybe we'll do something different." And he thinks he's actually negotiating with the Dems, and the Dems are saying no. Who's talking?
Yeah. No. Well, look. here's his problem. His problem is he made a promise during the campaign to build a wall. All right?
Yeah.
He then realized that he wasn't going to get a wall, so he made a deal with the Democrats to accept $1.3 billion in border security.
Yeah.
He said yes to that, and the Senate Republicans passed it. And then, because Rush Limbaugh and Ann Coulter get on television and radio and lambaste him for giving in and tell him it's the end of his presidency, instead of leading and telling these two opinion hosts that I'm the president, I'll make the decisions, you do whatever you want, I'm changing my mind. There is no crisis on the southern border about illegal immigration. We have a crisis on the southern border about people fleeing terrible conditions, but we don't have a crisis of illegals entering this country. It is not a crisis. It has been handled. It's been reversing since the year 2000. We have sections of walls up in certain places, but most illegals come here by overstaying their legal visas. Okay, so they're in the country legally, and they become illegal when their visas expire. They don't leave. That's most of them.
Yes.
Others
most
come
of
in
them.
Through
That's
ports
right.
of entry. Okay. The wall will not stop those people from coming in because they come in through entry ports and they sneak in, or they're in cargo holds, or they're transferred in trucks. So we don't have a crisis on the border. As a matter of fact, Sarah Sanders answered Chris Wallace by accusing the nation of catching 4,000 terrorists. And Chris, who was familiar with you, she said, that's not true. We've caught 4,000 – coming in at the southern border, I forgot to say that. 4,000 potential – she said, that's not true. They were caught at airports. They weren't caught at the southern border. Nobody was caught at the southern border, as a matter of fact, that was a terrorist. They were all caught trying to get on planes, and they were coming from countries that had some terrorist connection in the past. And the administration is trying to make that into thousands of people coming from the South. That's not true. It's a lie.
Yeah.
And it's a lie that Fox News has gotten its listeners to believe. When General Mattis resigned, it was the lead news story on every single television and radio station, but not on Fox.
Right.
They didn't
That's
cover
true.
It. They didn't read the letter. They are covering for President Trump at state radio and television.
Yep. And what is the demeanor of the nation? Do we know exactly, like, where
well,
do people
you,
stand? Or
you,
do,
watch, you look
are
at
they
the
involved
polling.
Or they recoiled?
Well, the midterm election showed that in the three states that gave Trump the presidency by –
Right.
A combined total of 77,000 votes, or less than 1% of the vote in each of those states, all voted blue. Blue Congress, blue Senate, blue governors. All of them.
Right.
Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. Now, if he cannot win those three states in its 2020 contest, when even more people vote, even more minorities and more women who are disgusted by that time with him go to the polls, and he's losing his support in the Midwest because there are no jobs coming back. The manufacturing jobs have been replaced by technology. It's not a question of shipping jobs overseas. It's a question of automation, making some of these jobs go away. In another two – and plus the fact that the Mueller investigation, since this judge – saw fit to extend 6 months Bob Mueller's investigation, he must have had something extremely substantial in his application that would lead the judge to believe that criminal charges are going to be brought and that those criminal charges are directly the result of conspiracy between someone in the United States and Russia. And I'm not accusing President Trump of anything. But there are too many markers of connections between his campaign and Russia to persuade me, not to persuade me that something didn't happen. I hate using two negatives, double negatives. However,
right.
Paul Manafort, Papadopoulos, Carter Page, Don Jr., Michael Cohn.
Yeah,
somebody was in Prague.
Yeah.
Somebody was in Prague. His cell phone was in Prague. Maybe he wasn't there with
his
cell phone, but somebody gave a cell phone too. Yeah, his cell phone was in Prague. So whether
he took it there or Don Jr.
Yeah, that's right. And so it could have been Don Jr. It could have been Carter Page. Could have been any one of a number of people. But there was apparently a Prague meeting with Russia.
Right.
Well, and then we know from the report that the Senate Intelligence Committee issued, which was a Republican-shared committee, that there were 185 million social media posts during the campaign that were negative about Clinton and that persuaded people on Instagram and on Facebook and on Twitter, either people that were Democrats to vote for Jill Stein or to stay home, or they were fomenting angst in the African-American community, or they were saying that Clinton was a crook, and they were all of this came out of Russia. And the fact of the matter is that the other day, Trump actually, as far as I'm concerned, made an admission that he is a pawn of Vladimir Putin. When he attempted to cast the Afghanistan invasion by Russia as an attempt to stop domestic terrorism in Russia, which it was absolutely not. And that is exactly the line that Putin is using in the parliament in Russia. That is the line he is using to try and rebuild the Russian image after getting kicked out and losing in Afghanistan. And the reason they collapsed had nothing to do with Afghanistan. It had to do with Ronald Reagan's Star Wars program and the fact that Russia couldn't afford to keep up, so it fell apart. The Soviet Union couldn't afford to keep up. So he's repeating stuff, you know, he's repeating nonsense. And, but it's not only nonsense, it's Putin propaganda word for word.
Yeah, that's the thing that's frightening. What in Afghanistan is it? Has the president somehow on some of the interests of the American public when he says, well, we should pull out of Afghanistan, but then that whole place would be run over, wouldn't it? What's the point of being there for the last 20 years? Or is there a time just to cut loose? And is that what he's latching on to? People are getting tired?
Well, he made a campaign promise. So look, people are getting tired of a 15-year war.
Sure.
Okay, this is the longest war in American history.
Exactly.
And the fact of the matter is that we were there in Afghanistan to prevent Al-Qaeda from getting a base that was territorial so they could attack us. And we were also there to try and stabilize the government. So under those circumstances, well, we've had troops in South Korea for 70 years, right?
Correct.
Since the early 1950s. So,
right.
So America withdrawing from the world, America first, is a policy that will lead to a war. Because if the world thinks America is not willing to defend its allies, what happens is it is inviting an attack. That's what it means.
Yeah.
When you indicate, it's indicating weakness, not strength. Because when you send a message that you're withdrawing from your as the number one nuclear power and the strongest government in the history of the Western world, and the primary reason that we have not had a war since 1945, a major world conflict since 1945, if you're telling the world now all of a sudden you're deciding we're going to just stay home. And Iran can do what it wants. He said that in Syria. Iran can do whatever it wants. Putin can do whatever he wants. You don't think that invites encroachment by aggressive nations on their neighbors and on the people in their area of what they perceive as their geographical sphere of influence? Well, it absolutely does.
It does. Yes, it does.
Is Trump doesn't seem to understand this, though, because it does embolden the rest of the world. When Pompeo goes to the Middle East, he's not going to convince people, whether it be Jordan or whether it be the Turks or the Iraqis or any of the, or the Israelis, of course, that he'll be there to defend them against incursions from outside. And is it just that he doesn't get it? And that's the whole thing?
Yes.
That's the basis of his whole, that's it? Like he's a vindictive or horrendous guy? It's just that he doesn't get it. He's not studying.
Well, he is. He's a narcissist. He's a narcissist,
yeah.
And he displays the classic symptoms of narcissistic personality
yeah.
disorder, which what
right.
I told you when he
yeah.
was running, that was going to be an issue. All right, now you
Absolutely.
See what a narcissist, he's a sick man. He is a sick
yeah.
individual who doesn't want to know about policy, who thinks he has all the answers because his name is Donald Trump. And he's got $1 billion, and he doesn't have to listen to his experts, and he doesn't have to understand geopolitical reality, and he doesn't have to stand by his allies because you know, but there's no particular rationale behind it because he's not bright enough to have any core beliefs.
But
he's a stupid rich man. He's a dumb rich man.
Well, that seems to be the case. But is one of the problems that is out there in the discourse of America is that Americans don't fully comprehend what he's doing. They don't know if he's on top of it. And yet there's some situations like he wants to pull out, he wants to disengage. It serves some people in the voters, some voters to say, oh, that's great. That's what we should do. At the same time, the Europeans are starting to pick up and say, well, we got to do more because America's abandoned the Middle East and we can't allow this to happen. Is Trump to some extent latching on to things that are seem to make sense? And maybe that's the problem. We
no.
don't understand if it's working or not.
No. He's not. Because everybody in the foreign policy field who has some knowledge thinks he's nuts. He's making the wrong decisions.
Right.
All right. The only people that are willing to defend him are Fox News opinion hosts and his sycophants that he surrounds himself with.
Right.
That's who, and they are willing to go to the mat for him because they have access to the most powerful man in the world, and that is intoxicating. When you can go down to Mar-a-Lago, by the way, I was invited to Mar-a-Lago for drinks. A couple of weekends ago, and I didn't go.
Okay.
But, all right, because I have a friend who's a member of Mar-a-Lago when we are, you know, who supports Trump. You know, he invited me down. We were talking about stuff. He said, why don't you tell him directly? I said, no, I'm not coming to Mar-a-Lago to confront President Trump. As it turned out, because if I have a drink, I really will confront him, but he didn't come down anyway. So you know, give me one martini and I'll tell him exactly what I think about him. But anyway, I digress. Yeah, we have a lot of dumb people in the United States. We have a lot of people that are easily persuaded because they parrot what they hear on Fox. If they hear Sean Hannity or Jeanine Pirro, and shame on her, by the way, or Rush Limbaugh, if they hear these people constantly attempting to defend the indefensible. There's always going to be a portion of the nation, okay, that's going to buy it. Now, that portion presently is somewhere between 38 and 42, okay, because that's his approval rating. His disapproval rating, it was in the 50s, is in the 50s, in the mid-50s.
Right.
So, you know, whether it's because people are Republican and they're trying because they think it's going to be socialism or whether it's a personality cult, or whether it's the Christianists that I referred to earlier in the broadcast who think this guy is King Cyrus. Any way you slice it, all right? Any way you slice it, you're going to get 30 to 35% of the people. Even Nixon had that the day he resigned, that still think Trump's a wonderful president, the best president we've ever had. And on and on. And part of the problem is they don't want to believe they could possibly be wrong because they voted for him. So Those people are not persuadable. But we have a democratic republic. We have
I just
almost saw a Bentley belt into another car. Anyway,
oh,
so we have a democratic republic,
and you know what
the matter is that we have elections. Elections, what? Yeah, I know what it costs. I had one. It cost $45,000 to fix a fortunately it was insured, to fix a hole in the bumper that I got on a snow pothole.
Yeah.
And I took it in because I want to get rid of the car because I got 8 miles a gallon and cost too much money. And when I got it back, the insurance company sent me a check for $35,000 and then another $10,000. And I said, nobody got killed. And they said, it's a hand-finished car. It was all labor.
Right.
So anyway, that's just a side. So Donald Trump is a disaster. And when that's going to change? It's going to change in 2020 if the Democrats nominate somebody who's stable. They can't nominate somebody like Beto O'Rourke, who has no experience at all. So he'll be running against the president who's got 4 years.
It's so interesting that you bring that up, because I just wrote something over the weekend that the 2020 election will be decided in 2019, and yet we don't hear anything lucid at the moment from the Democratic elected officials. They're amorphous.
I don't agree with that. You keep saying that, but they're fighting a battle in the Congress to open the government. So that's not amorphous.
Right.
They have six bills. The Democratic Congress passed six Republican bills to open up the government. All right?
Right.
Excluding Homeland Security, which is the only department that has anything to do with the border wall. So what the Democrats are saying is, look, why are you closing agriculture? Why are you closing the IRS? Why are you closing food stamps? Why are you torturing these 800,000 people and forcing them to lose their homes? And worse, let's open up those parts of the government that are not related to the wall, and then we can talk about the money for the wall. And these were bills that were passed by the Republican Senate, exactly the wording that the Senate used. And the House reported them out, and the Senate won't vote on them because they know that Trump won't sign them because he wants the wall. Now, there's nothing amorphous about that.
No, there isn't anything amorphous about that. It's just that somehow, you know, I read a lot, and at the same time, so I understand what you're saying, and I concur with it. And yet, at the same time, I see that there's a lack of prudent language that gives it expression that people understand, and that the nation as a whole just doesn't seem to get it.
Hear me out for a second. What you're saying is there is no one voice speaking on behalf of all Democrats rebutting what Donald Trump stands for.
Right.
But there are multiple voices at this point in time from lots of different different Democrats criticizing Donald Trump. What we have to in a republic, we have to wait for this entire thing to gel. We have to wait for Elizabeth Warren declared her candidacy for president, and other people are going to be jumping in over the next 90 days. Then we're going to have a debate.
Yeah.
Then you're going to hear these individuals go to rallies and whip up the support, and then the Democratic Party will make its choice. And I predict that it will choose for president either Joe Biden or Sherrod Brown from Ohio, and the vice presidency will go to a female of color, probably Kamala Harris.
Well, you know, I guess you're right about, you know, you're right about what you've said. It's just that I've been listening to you, and I've been studying on my own as well. And at the same time, I'm saying, well, what's taken everybody so long to know what you've been saying for 2.5 years? I don't know, like, how much more does it take? Is the process that slow? We're going to take 10 years to get this thing straightened out?
Hezzy, I have one voice, and I have limited exposure. Fox News is on day after day, hour after hour, and they're programming people that are watching. Fox News is watched more than MSNBC and CNN combined. When Rachel Maddow by the way, Rachel Maddow is doing better against Sean Hannity. She's beating him now for the first time because Sean Hannity misled everybody about the midterms, told it was going to be a Republican wave, and all of a sudden you got 40 House Democrats, okay? Yep. You got 40 seats picked up. So he was wrong. So maybe he's lying. You know, some people start to say, "Yeah, not so much, Sean. Tune in to somebody who talks about the facts and then has an opinion. But the facts are correct. She doesn't play with – Rachel Maddow does not fool with the facts. She doesn't have an alternate fact. She deals with the facts as they are, and then she's got her own opinion based on facts. Remember, you're entitled to your opinion, but you're not entitled to your own facts.
Correct. Absolutely. All right. I guess I just – you're more patient than I am. I'm just saying, like, 2.5 years of listening to Michael Edelman and reading stuff that actually validates what you've been saying – I would have thought that we had a much more consolidated voice and direction, but evidently you're going to be proven right again because it's going to take more time. And it's amazing then
be
how
patient.
Fast 2 years fly by.
Well, it's not even going to be 2 years. You're only going to have to wait about 3 months for Bob Mueller's report, and then all hell will break loose.
Exactly. Yeah. Unbelievable. Well, as usual, compelling to say the least. And just outrageous as well. So thank you for informing us again. Have a great week. All the best to you,
thanks,
Michael.
I'll speak to you next week.
You too. Bye-bye.
Be well. Well, there we have it. None other than Michael Edelman. So, you know, he's not only more lucid about these issues, but he's also more patient than I am. And I'm just saying, like, really, like, how much more does it need to take for people to get it together? But evidently, as far as Michael Edelman's concerned, yes, they will take more. And so I await Mr. Mueller's, the special investigator, wait for his reports to come out because that's going to blow everything wide open, which is going to be very, very compelling. Well, let's find out what's going on in our neck of the woods. Let's find out what we're doing over at the Yonkers Tribune, and then we'll be back.
The Yonkers Tribune, named Home of the Acid-Tongued Bloggers by the New York Times, is a multifaceted news organization dedicated to keeping the citizens of Yonkers and Westchester informed via the internet and radio. Hezzy Aris is the tireless publisher, editor, and radio host of the Yonkers Tribune. He is a balding, bearded gnome equipped with a digital camera and a stenopad at all times. Hezzy is frequently spotted in local meetings, translating the events into a Baroque prose style with an infusion of well-mannered outrage. The Yonkers Tribune attracts an informed, well-educated, affluent audience who hungers to know more about politics in all its permutations and nuances. Politics, says Hezzy, is our forte. Advertising inquiries are always welcome. Please call Hezzy Aris at 914-562-0834 or send an email to ehezi@hush.com.
Welcome back. And this is Westchester on the Level. But if you want to reach out to the Yonkers Tribune, of course, you can reach them at their new number, which is 347-415-4326. So 347-415-4326. You could text, you can call, you could leave a message. And that's the story. Well, Bolton has set off and set out conditions for the U.S. Syria withdrawal. And this is the report that's come out about that. So listen in for a moment, and then we'll be able to latch on to what's going on. So listen in. Bear with me a moment.
Backpedaling on Syria. The announcement by the U.S. President Donald Trump last month of an abrupt withdrawal of 2,000 U.S. troops, initially expected to be completed within weeks, is now in pause mode. His national security advisor, John Bolton, is setting conditions in talks with the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Sunday. He said the fight against Islamic State militants remains a priority.
We're going to be discussing the president's decision to withdraw, but to do so from northeast Syria in a way that makes sure that ISIS is defeated. able to revive itself and become a threat again.
Another condition, aside defeating the Islamic State group, is getting assurances on the safety of Kurdish YPG fighters in northeast Syria. Bolton's talks in Ankara with Recep Tayyip Erdogan will center on protecting them. It's likely to be the dialogue of the deaf, with the Turkish president's spokesman stating, one aim of Turkey's fight against the PKK and its Syrian extension is to rescue the Kurds from the cruelty and oppression of this terrorist group. The United States is also signaling that its troops will remain in southern Syria to counter Iranian activity in the region. The U.S. president, meanwhile, in recent days, has reiterated that the U.S. would be pulling its troops out of Syria, but suggested the move might not happen soon.
But I don't want to be in Syria forever.
Nicholas Rushworth.
Wow. So, yeah, that's one of the big issues, and that seems to be what the president is saying. He just doesn't want to be there forever, and that's the big issue. Well, one of the things is also that America's youngest congresswoman, she's launched a radical plan to tax the rich. And some people think she's a little crazy, but the truth is that she's some ideas that are actually captivating people's minds. So Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez began her term as the youngest woman ever elected to the United States Congress with a bang this week by proposing to tax the ultra-rich at 60 or 70%. The daughter of working-class parents, a 29-year-old New Yorker, was following up on her campaign promise. Quote, people are going to have to pay their fair share of taxes, the Democrat told CBS television 60 Minutes in excerpts released ahead of its Sunday telecast. The proposal is part of an ambitious tax plan dubbed the Green New Deal that aims to eliminate carbon emissions by 2030. Ocasio-Cortez suggested taxing the ultra-wealthy up to 70% in order to finance the plan. It's going to require a lot of rapid change that we don't even conceive as possible right now, she said. What is the problem with trying to push out technological capacities to the furthest extent possible, she asked. To pay for the plan, Ocasio-Cortez floated the idea of a tax rate as high as 70% on the ultra-rich. She referred to the progressive taxation system that was in place in the 1960s before Ronald Reagan took office as president, when the top earners paid 70% in taxes, and that rate then gradually dropped. You look at our tax rate back in the 1960s, and when you have a progressive tax rate system, your tax rate, let's say from zero to $75,000, may be 10% or 15%, etc., Ocasio-Cortez said. But once you get to like the tippy tops on your $10 millionth, sometimes you see tax rates as high as 60% or 70%. That doesn't mean all 10 million are taxed at an extremely high rate, but it means that as you climb up this ladder, you should be contributing more. The top marginal tax rate is now 37% following President Donald Trump's fiscal reforms. It was previously at 39.6%. So even though it has little chance of success, the proposal backed by the young lawmaker has already garnered significant support. It landed her on the front page of the New York Daily News, an image of which Ocasio-Cortez was quick to retweet. A Washington Post analysis found that if the approximately 16,000 Americans who earn more than $10 million each paid 70% income taxes for any revenue above that marker, the federal government would take in around $72 billion per year. But the sum would likely be much less lower because individuals falling in that bracket would find ways to avoid the heavy tax burden. In a New York Times op-ed, Nobel Prize-winning economist Paul Krugman backed Ocasio-Cortez, rejecting, quote, the constant effort to portray her as flaky and ignorant, end quote. on the tax issue, she's just saying what good economists have been saying, he added. Her surprise victory during the Democratic primaries in June saw her beat Joseph Crowley, who had run unopposed for more than a decade and was considered a contender to become the next Speaker of the House of Representatives. The victory has made her a key figure of the liberal wing of the party, and Ocasio-Cortez has demonstrated more than once that she can respond swiftly to her detractors. When Republican campaign consultant Ed Rollins called her a little girl on a conservative television show, Ocasio-Cortez shot back on Twitter, "If anything, this dude is a walking argument to tax misogyny at 100%. Well, on Friday, a video released online by a detractor showing a young Ocasio-Cortez dancing with fellow Boston University students to the Phoenix song Listomania in a remake of a mashup of scenes from the Brat Pack movies. But rather than embarrass Ocasio-Cortez, the release ended up having the opposite of its intended effect. Congresswoman, who has a young social media presence, responded by posting a new video of her dancing in front of her office on Capitol Hill, writing, quote, "I hear the GOP thinks women dancing are scandalous. Wait till they find out congresswomen dance too." With her past as a New York bartender, Ocasio-Cortez is a figurehead of the new wave of young lawmakers who entered Congress after the midterm elections, bringing fresh perspectives and more diversity to the legislature. Asked if she considers herself to be a radical, Ocasio-Cortez told CBS, "You know, if that's what radical means, call me a radical," end quote. "I think that it only has ever been radicals that have changed this country," she explained. Abraham Lincoln made the radical decision to sign the Emancipation Proclamation. Franklin Delano Roosevelt made the radical decision to embark establishing programs like Social Security. That is radical. So she's quite lucid, and she's got concepts that may offend some, but the bottom line is she's also got credentials because her perspectives are captivating people. And that becomes a very, very important aspect of politics, of reaching out, outreach efforts, and just getting her message out there, which unfortunately a lot of people in politics do very poorly. She evidently excels at it, so it just is what it is. Wanted to go over and do some a little bit more on the news front. Bear with me a moment. And just catch up on some things here. And one moment here. All right. Well, this is really quite interesting with regard to Italy and France, which I think is going to be quite compelling. It turns out that Italy's populist leaders, they back France's yellow vest protests. And so the two leaders of Italy's ruling populist coalition today publicly threw their support behind the yellow vest protesters agitating in neighboring France. Yellow vests do not weaken Deputy Prime Minister Luigi Di Maio, who heads the anti-establishment five-star movements, the M5S, wrote on his party's blog, echoed by his counterpart from the far-right League, Matteo Salvini. "Now, I support honest citizens protesting against a president who governs against his people," Salvini said in a statement, while firmly condemning recent protest violence. Di Maio's M5S has wanted a direct democracy since it began in 2009, and on Monday he offered French protesters the use of the party's so-called Rousseau system to improve organization and draw up an electoral program. Very, very compelling, just because it's captivating. It's actually having an intrusion by the Italian government onto French politics that is rarely seen. So just very, very interesting to say the least. Now, bear with me a moment here. 1 second, press the wrong button. And this is interesting. Evidently, the Pope has urged the U.S. leaders to help migrants stranded in the Mediterranean. And Pope Francis, past Sunday, urged EU members to show concrete solidarity with 49 migrants stranded on non-governmental organization ships off the coast of Malta who have been refused permission to land. So that's something that you should consider as well. And this is really important on the international religious front. It seems that Egypt's president has inaugurated the Coptic Cathedral after a bomb blast. So Egypt's president Sisi inaugurated the country's biggest capital on Coptic Christmas Eve Sunday. We didn't tell you that last week. A day after a deadly bomb blast near a church in the country where jihadists have repeatedly targeted Christians, Egypt inaugurated a massive cathedral under heavy security on Coptic Christmas Eve Sunday, a day after the deadly bomb blast near a church in the country where jihadists have repeatedly targeted Christians. President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi observed a moment of silence after Saturday's explosion on the eastern edge of Cairo killed a policeman who was trying to defuse the device and wounded two others. Security was tight as Sisi officially opened the Cathedral of the Nativity of Christ in Egypt's new administrative capital, 45 kilometers east of Cairo, ahead of Christmas Mass. Worshippers had to pass through three sets of metal detectors to access the event, while armored vehicles and dozens of ambulances were stationed nearby. So that's the story there, very compelling to say the least. 1 second here. I wanted to cover some other issues. Bear with me a moment. Okay. And here's another situation. A policeman's been killed in a Cairo church bombing. Listen to this. Bear with me a moment.
Security has been stepped up in the Egyptian capital ahead of Christmas, which Egypt's minority Coptic Christians celebrate this Sunday. The device that exploded was one of two found inside a bag. There was no immediate claim of responsibility. Egyptian security forces are in an ongoing battle with Islamist insurgents who regularly target Coptic Christians. More than 100 Copts have been killed in jihadist attacks since December 2016. Among the most deadly were twin church bombings in April 2017, in which more than 40 people died. The country has been under a state of emergency since then. This latest attack comes ahead of Sunday's Christmas Mass for Copts, when President Fattah al-Sisi is due to inaugurate the Cathedral of Nativity in Egypt's new administrative capital, 45 kilometers east of Cairo.
Okay, so that's a repeat of what we told you. And the analysis from abroad. And this is important, too, because there's a thaw in relations between Arab leaders and Syria's Assad. So for years, he was reviled by the West and opposed by the Gulf monarchies. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, who has regained control of most of his country, is now being courted by Arab leaders, marking a strategic shift in the region. So after the military successes that allowed him to regain control of a very large part of the Syrian territory, the Assad regime is close to scoring a major diplomatic victory as well. though he is frozen, he was frozen out of the international community by Western powers, suspected of having used chemical weapons, isolated by the Sunni powers of the region. There have been signs in recent weeks that Assad is being welcomed in from the cold. Regional media are increasingly speculating that Syria will be able to return to the ranks of the Arab League, from which it was suspended in November of 2011 in protest at the crackdown of the uprising against the regime. Syrian participation in an Arab League economic summit to be held in Lebanon in January 19 to 20 is even more consideration, even more under consideration, according to local diplomatic sources. The preliminary step would put Syrian officials back in touch with their counterparts 3 months before the Arab League's annual summit to be held in Tunis at the end of March. And coincidentally, a private Syrian airline flew a commercial flight to Tunisia last week, the first since 2011. The December 27 announcement that the United Arab Emirates would reopen its embassy in Damascus was yet another confirmation of the Syrian president's return to grace. The United Arab Emirates, along with Saudi Arabia, was a major sponsor of Syrian opposition forces. The step would have been unthinkable without the approval of Riyadh and the Gulf Cooperation Council. And the United Arab Emirates Minister of State for Foreign Affairs, Anwar Gargash, took to social media to justify the move. Given the regional expectations and expansionisms of Iran and Turkey, there is an Arab role to play in Syria that has become even more necessary, he wrote on Twitter. Bahrain also announced that it was... also has plans to reopen the embassy in the Syrian capital. So on December 31, Kuwaiti Deputy Foreign Minister Khaled al-Jarallah, who said he expects a thaw in relations between Syria and Arab Gulf countries in the coming days, according to reports by the official KUNA, K-U-N-A news agency, he said the Gulf states remain committed to the discussion of the Arab League and would reopen their embassies in Damascus once the reorganization has authorized doing so. So there you have it. Well, that's the end of the day for us. That's our program for today. I wanted to go over and advise you what's going to happen tomorrow. Tomorrow we're going to be speaking to Robert Keston, and then we're going to speak to Yonkers Insider, publisher and editor of Delphin Musler. So we're going to speak to him. So Robert Keston first, then Delphin Musler second from 10:30 to 11, and we'll do a little bit of international news with you at that point at about 11. So that's the story, and I want to thank you for being with us today. All the best. Goodbye.